Peter Donalds here in for Kathleen Dunn, and this hour we talk about the religious right in America, their impact on politics. We thought with the passing of Jerry Falwell on Tuesday, we'd spend the hour with take a historic perspective of the Christian right in America. We want to get, I think the first thing I'll ask my guest is we'll agree on some terms, because there are some terms that get bandied about and used in the same way. There's religious right, there's Christian right, also evangelical comes in. So we'll get our terms straight, and then we'll talk about the history and the future of that movement in America. Our guest is William Martin. He's professor of religion and public policy in the Department of Sociology and and he's also senior scholar at the James Baker Third Institute for Public Policy, all at Rice University. Your calls are very welcome, comments and questions, 800-486-8655, the toll-free number. Let us know what you think about the impact of Jerry Falwell, the moral majority, and also if your questions about the history of the movement. Certainly didn't start with Jerry Falwell, but he was at the forefront of that rise in the 80s especially. Again, 800-486-8655. If you're in Milwaukee, 227-2050. And later with our second guest, I also want to get into the current state of affairs, especially with the current crop of presidential candidates from the Republican side. How do they reflect where the movement stands today? But to our current guest, William Martin from Rice University, welcome to Public Radio.
Thank you. Happy to be with you.
And as I said, it didn't start with Jerry Falwell. He didn't invent it. He just maybe perfected it for a while. What was Jerry Falwell's influence?
Well, Falwell was, of course, he was important because he had a nationwide television program in the 1970s. It didn't. The numbers were never quite as large as sometimes they were said to be. But he had an audience of probably a million or a million and a half of people who listened to him regularly. And after 1976, when Jimmy Carter won the election and a great many evangelicals came out to vote for him as a kind of anti-Nixon or an antidote to the Nixon era, some of the people who were already part of what they call themselves the New Right, they had organized themselves very effectively after Barry Goldwater's defeat in 1964, and they decided, one of them said, that evangelical Christians represented the largest stand of uncut virgin timber on the political landscape, and they set out to do some heavy logging. And so some of their key members, recognizing that Falwell was already beginning to talk about things like abortion particularly, but some other issues, they went to him and talked to him about really making an effort to organize conservative Christians. And they came up with the name Moral Majority, which he founded in Lynchburg, Virginia, in 1979. So he became, in the 1980 election, Falwell's Moral Majority was the most visible representative of what then came to be called the religious right. Other groups included the Religious Roundtable, Christian Voice, which drew heavily from Pentecostal circles. What they were not really effective grassroots organizations, but they did get millions of fundamentalists and evangelicals registered to vote and involved in politics, which was new for many of them. And they played a significant role in turning conservative Christians to Ronald Reagan, who certainly knew how to play to that audience. So he legitimized political participation by millions of people who weren't even registered to vote, and also encouraged pastors to get their congregations involved. He told them the important things to do are get them saved, get them baptized, and get them registered to vote.
Mm-hmm. And let's step back just a second. And as I mentioned earlier, let's get our terms straight. Do I make a mistake when I intersperse religion with Christian, with evangelical? Let's define those terms.
All right. I prefer to use Christian right.
Okay.
Religious right, there are many Muslims, for example, who would be conservative, who would be considered part of the religious right. So I prefer to say Christian right. Actually, it's largely a movement of white evangelical Protestants, including Pentecostals and Charismatics, and also fundamentalists who believe much the same as evangelicals, but tend to be more exclusive in their beliefs. Mm-hmm. Evangelicals tend to have a wider scope of people with whom they'll associate.
And also conservative Catholics, right?
And also conservative. It's been growing among conservative Roman Catholics and also growing among African Americans, in both cases, largely because of sexual issues.
Yeah. Did we see a rise akin to the 70s or 80s at other times in our history? I know one period you write about came to a head with the 1925 Scopes trial.
Yes, and Prohibition as well. In that period, in the early decades, you had conservative Christians, along with some others who weren't so conservative, who were very much involved in bringing about Prohibition or working for it and effectively bringing it about. And then, of course, with the Scopes trial. Because of the ultimate failure of Prohibition and the ridicule that was heaped on fundamentalists over the Scopes trial, many of them just drew back. They had been triumphant in the teens and the early 20s, and then there was a big split between the fundamentalists and what they called the modernists, who took a more liberal view about Scripture and a number of other issues. And they withdrew, and many writers just thought they had disappeared, but in fact what they were doing was regrouping and forming Bible colleges, Bible institutes, radio programs, doing a great deal of publishing and printing, so that they had, they went into regrouping rather than to disappearing, and came back pretty strong in the 1940s.
Now, the issues that we would expect, things like you mentioned Prohibition or gambling or pornography, these very sort of obviously moral issues, weren't the only ones, though. They also got, Falwell and others, got very much into free enterprise and very much spoke out against women's rights and multiculturalism. How did they draw the line between their faith and something like free enterprise?
Well, that's a good question. Of course, free enterprise is very much a part of the American culture, and they have seen themselves as very patriotic and part of the American culture. There were some other things as a consequence of their alliance with traditional Republicans. They have come to hold, as you indicate, quite conservative positions on taxation, governmental regulations, the environment, defense, views that are not required by a literal reading of Scripture. On the other side, many traditional Republicans have become champions of issues dear to the religious right. For example, abortion, stem cell research, vouchers, school prayer, public display of religious symbols, the intelligent design and abstinence-only sex education, issues that they may not have embraced were it not for the need to please that important segment of their coalition. So it's worked both ways.
So each side was impacting the other and sort of aiding in each of their evolutions.
And that wasn't just accidental. Paul Weyrich, who's one of the organizers of the New Right helped to recruit Falwell, in a meeting with leaders of both sides, says, listen, we know that you guys over here are not very interested in tax issues, but these traditional Republicans are, and so you've got to adopt them. And to the traditional Republicans, you don't want the government in your bedroom, but you've got to stand with these guys on these issues if you're going to have a coalition that's going to be successful. And, of course, we see that that has happened.
Now, for political speeches to be coming from the pulpit and for things like voting lists to be published and distributed to the congregation, this was controversial in the churches themselves, wasn't it?
It was. But the fact that you had people who were widely known on television, pastor in Falwell's case, pastor of a very successful large church before he got involved in this, in Pat Robertson's case, founder of the first Christian television network, these were seen as real champions of conservative Christianity, and the fact that they were saying to do it seemed to legitimize it. In fact, did legitimize it for them.
Yeah, we're talking with William Martin, professor of religion and public policy at Rice University, and we hope you'll call the program at 800-486-8655. You mentioned Pat Robertson. Let's talk about Falwell's other contemporaries, people like Jim Baker, Jimmy Swaggart, Pat Robertson, and of course the great Billy Graham, who's been in the regular visitor to the Oval Office since Eisenhower, I guess.
Yes, of course. He visited with Truman, but that one didn't go off very well.
Oh, okay.
But certainly he has been a friend of virtually all of the presidents since that time. And as you probably know, I wrote a biography of Billy Graham called A Prophet with Honor, The Billy Graham Story, which is seen as an important or a significant study of Billy Graham.
Mm-hmm.
Billy Graham, incidentally, after having essentially been burned by his associations with Richard Nixon, did not become part of the Christian right and warned his fellow preachers against it. He said, "You can be so easily co-opted and taken advantage of and manipulated that I really advise you to stay out of that." And he largely did, although he was a friend to Ronald Reagan and, of course, to the Bushes, but and to Bill Clinton as well. I think it's significant. Bill Clinton is going to be, along with President Bush, appearing at the dedication of the Billy Graham Library on May 31st.
Yeah. In fact, we saw him on the news with his regular visits to each and every president throughout my whole lifetime, except for, did he have a relationship with Jimmy Carter at all?
He had a sort of a relationship. It was strained. When Carter became president, Billy Graham did not think he was going to be elected, and made an unfortunate statement in saying that he thought you ought to look at overall competence and not just at a person's religious faith. And that was seen as a pretty direct slam at Carter, and so there was a strain there. Jimmy Carter, before that, when he was governor of Georgia, had chaired what they called a movie crusade, where they organized it like as if Billy Graham were going to be there, but instead of Billy Graham's being there, they showed movies about some of Billy Graham's movies. Carter had been a friend and supporter of Graham's to that extent. But they did patch up things, and he did visit the White House when Carter was president, but it was a bit of a strained relationship.
Yeah, and the fact that Jimmy Carter was a self-proclaimed born-again Christian and yet held views antithetical to the movement at large, I imagine, was a sticky situation for everybody.
It was. I mean, evangelicals backed Carter. By the time the election came that year, they were backing off from him pretty rapidly, because he had said that he believed women should have a choice for abortion. He had done, as much as anything probably, he did an interview with Playboy in which he acknowledged that he had lusted after a woman in his heart, or lusted after in his heart. And, mm-hmm. of course, anybody that grew up, particularly in the South, but familiar with the Bible, would recognize that particular phrase as a standard way of saying it, but it was taken by the media as something really outre, and more by people in the Christian right as, what in the world is Jimmy Carter doing talking to that magazine that shows naked ladies?
Yeah. We are talking with William Martin. He's professor of religion and public policy at Rice University, about the religious right, its history and impact on American politics. Jerry Falwell, as you know, passed away Tuesday. So not only the topic of Jerry Falwell, but the larger topic of how the Christian right has impacted American politics to this day. And we'll also get into how it may continue to impact. We'll find out about that this hour. Your calls welcome at 800-486-8655. That's toll free. Or in Milwaukee, 227-2050. Peter Donald's in for Kathleen Dunn as we talk with William Martin of Rice University about the religious right in America, its history, and its future. Your call's welcome, and we start with Mike in Appleton. Hi, Mike.
Yes. Jerry Falwell certainly was a very important figure in that he certainly brought religion into American politics. Now, the problem I have with politics and religion becoming too closely aligned is that a faith-based sense of reality starts to take hold, and therefore facts and reality base become somewhat less important. A very good example of that was WMD and going into Iraq. There was a certain faith-based sense that, well, we believe they are there, and facts on the ground may not apply.
Well, I think that that's using faith-based in a. We're not really talking about religious faith there so much. It's just that was either erroneous information or a determination to do something despite the fact, despite the faith, despite the facts, despite the evidence. But I believe that religious people obviously do have the right to be involved in political activity, and they can't be expected to leave their religious convictions behind, and they have a right to organize themselves to work for the good of the country as they understand it. But there are some reasonable limits of that I think are really important, and the most important of these is that a religious body doesn't have the right, simply because it may be in the majority or better organized than other groups, to bind its specifically religious doctrines on others or to require that others help pay for those. And here we're talking about belief that God created the universe, whether in 6 days or millions of years, or that we should have the Ten Commandments displayed, or some children do have other gods before the God of Israel. Some Americans make and worship graven images. So the Supreme Court decided that shouldn't be displayed in public schools. It's perfectly acceptable to say, I believe this because the Bible tells me so, but that doesn't in itself trump other arguments. The Bible, the Quran, the scriptures of Hinduism or Buddhism and other religions that are in this country have no standing in our legislatures or courts, although, of course, they will have an impact on the thinking of people who are making those decisions and of all of us who vote.
Yeah, that line between church and state, wherever you draw it, would you say, as a scholar, that it's shifted over the last 20, 30 years?
It has, and it's been quite a conscious effort to shift it. Since we won't have time to go into this, I've written what I think is a pretty concise statement of my views on a paper that you can find at just go to bakerinstitute.org and look for papers from 2006, and there is an article there on secular state religious people that I've written that I think is a pretty good statement of my own feelings of the about the separation of church and state and its importance to democracy.
Mike, thanks for your call. Ann is in Milwaukee. Hi, Ann.
Good morning. I read a post on a blog this morning, a legal blog, that said that Jerry Falwell really got his start back in the late 50s and early 60s, and what he was angry about was the Brown versus Board of Education ruling, and he was angry about that because, I guess he had anti-black feelings and was his start was really sort of a racist beginning.
He was certainly a segregationist, and he later tried to soften that. I heard yesterday an interview that Terry Gross had done with him on Fresh Air that was replayed, and some of your listeners may have heard that, in which he talked about how he was a pioneer in going down and baptizing and accepting black people, and in fact, it's just not true. And I've written about that in the book With God on Our Side, The Rise of the Religious Right in America, and it's just not true. They drove black people away from their church. So he was a segregationist. Of course, he was not alone in that at that time in the South. But he was a segregationist. Now black students are welcomed at Liberty University, and we're before that. But I think it's fair to say that the Liberty Bible School, or whatever its proper name was, that the Thomas Road Baptist Church organized was a segregationist academy, as were many other such academies that were open during that period following Brown and following the Civil Rights Act in the 1960s.
Yeah, any racial component to the origins of the Christian right, has that been successfully overcome by now, or is that still a stain?
I think it's been pretty well overcome. In fact, evangelical conservative Christians have made some significant efforts to overcome that. Several years ago, when Promise Keepers was being criticized for a number of things, including its attitude toward women, you had to admit that it was making a really serious effort to bring a reconciliation between blacks and whites. And while no doubt racism still exists, as it does in other segments of the society, among evangelical and conservative Christians, that I think that that's not a charge that can be brought any more successfully, particularly when you consider region into the matter, than with other parts of society.
Mm-hmm. And thank you for your call. We go to Nan in La Crosse. Hi.
Hello, good morning. I would like to raise 2 points. One is if the guest could compare and contrast the Christian Right movement with the Inquisition. I recently had been watching the Secrets of the Inquisition on public television, and it just seems to me there's a lot of similarities of what the Christian Right is seeking as the Inquisition did. And then secondly, what I don't understand is the that Christian Right tends to look towards the Old Testament in terms of their beliefs, etc., but I thought if you're a Christian, you'd look more towards the New Testament, and why in that mode they're so pro-Republican when most of the Republican candidates have been divorced, which I thought that was supposed to be such a no-no for the Christian Right. It seems like there's hypocrisy all around there.
Nan, thanks a lot. So a couple of things there. Historic comparison to the Inquisition?
Well, in the time of the Inquisition, of course, the church had more power. It had the power to enforce its dictates and its efforts. I think it's a little bit of strong comparison. I mean, yes, too strong a comparison.
Yeah,
there is an effort on the part of many there is an effort to make the nation more explicitly Christian. And in a number of ways, and thinking that that's a very good thing, instead of a secular nation in which Christianity and other religions can flourish.
So to either convert or marginalize if you're not going to convert.
Those are possibilities. I mean, those are at least to, if not marginalize, to make clear that the dominant culture is going to be heavily infused with Christian with Christian values and even Christian doctrine.
Right, and with the counter movement of multiculturalism, which really took hold in the 60s and through the 70s and to today, that's a kind of a dirty word to a lot of folks in the Christian right, isn't it?
Yes, because the way it's used often is to say, well, if you stand for multiculturalism and appreciation of the values of different cultures, that means you are a complete relativist and think that anything you want to do is all right. And the same way that they've used the term, you know, postmodernism to say that all standards are gone. And I think either postmodernism or multiculturalism are not saying that no one value is to be preferred over another, but that in this country, nobody has the final say. Everybody can play.
Right.
And you have to win your arguments on their merits, not simply because you come in with a warrant that you finally have to agree with me.
And then finally, before I let you go, we have a second guest coming on, Gerald Prader of Lawrence University, to continue the hour. But before I let you go, Nan's second point about some biblical inconsistencies and surprise that the Christian right focuses on the Old Testament.
Well, they do, particularly on things like homosexuality. That's a key one that they focus on, and also on the harsher punishments. They neglect things, for example, if you were you started off by asking about free enterprise. If you read the experience of the early church in the first chapters of Acts, you find where they had all things in common. It's hard to get rampant capitalism out of that. It reads like a manual for socialism.
Hmm.
There is a picking and choosing, and I think that it's very interesting when you look at the candidates who have been divorced in the current of the current Republican crop. That this is going to pose a problem. It'll be interesting to see whether they simply say, "Well, I don't like this, but this is closer. We're going to lose more if we don't vote for this person," or whether they're going to listen. Mitt Romney has said, interestingly, he's one of the few candidates. He's one candidate who's been married to only one woman. So they've got to choose between his the marriage of the sort they would like, and his Mormonism, which they're not so comfortable with.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to let you go and grab our second guest. Thank you so much for spending this time with us.
Well, it's a pleasure.
All right. You take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
The program continues. Stay tuned and stay online if you've given us a call. That was William Martin. Gerald Pradera is going to join us next. William Martin is professor of religion and public policy in the Department of Sociology at Rice University, where he is also senior scholar in the James A. Baker III Institute for Public Policy. He's also the author of several books. He mentioned the autobiography of Billy Graham and With God on Our Side, The Rise of the Religious Right in America. And so that's our first segment guest. Our second segment guest is Gerald Pradera. He is Associate Professor of History at Lawrence University. And I believe he's on the line with us.
Yes, Professor. Yes, I am.
Hello. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. Were you able to hear any part of that first segment?
I just got the last minute or two.
Okay. Well, let's then transition there from that last minute or two. Talking about the Christian right, and from Professor Martin, we got a pretty good historical perspective. Let's start to look at the current state of affairs and the future of the religious right. The current crop of presidential candidates on the Republican side, especially the leaders Giuliani, McCain, Romney, don't fit the exact mold, do they?
No, they really don't. You know, what's interesting about the Christian right looking to the future, and I imagine that Professor Martin focused on this, is that at this point, the Christian right doesn't necessarily have to form organizations to influence the Republican Party, because they are the Republican Party at this point. They are inside the Republican Party. And I think that is going to be very important in terms of understanding where they're going to be going in the future, because they're the establishment at this point. You know, it's sometimes very comforting for people to view themselves as outsiders, especially when they form groups like the Moral Majority. But at this point, the Republican Party is the Christian right to a large extent, so they're insiders. And I think that's going to change the way they view political candidates going forward. And certainly, Giuliani and McCain and Romney don't fit their perfect model, especially someone like Giuliani, who I think they're going to go after pretty hard during the campaign. But I think it's important to note that at this point, they are the Republican Party. They're not trying to influence the Republican Party.
Well, Jerry Falwell said a very similar thing in 1989 when he dissolved the Moral
right.
Majority, saying the work has been accomplished.
Our work has been done. We created the Reagan Revolution, and I'm not sure whether Professor Martin talked about this, but what I think Jerry Falwell's significance is that he took the fundamentalist movement into politics generally. I don't know whether Professor Martin talked about the impact of the Scopes trial and how it basically drove fundamentalism out of politics for about 50 years until Jerry Falwell put it back. And I think that's why he is so important. And, you know, like him or not, he is a very, very important historical figure. I think he's more important than anyone else historically on the Christian right. He is more important than James Dobson. He is more important than Pat Robertson. I think he's really like the founding father of the Christian right. His great contribution, in a sense, is to put evangelicals back into the political system where they were not for 50 years.
Yeah.
That's really, I think, is significant.
Our guest is Gerald Pradera of Lawrence University. Your call's welcome at 800-486-8655. Ron is calling us from Madison. Hi, Ron.
Hi. I have one comment. First of all, I'm a Christian, and Jerry Falwell's views are nothing even close to mine, so there's no confusion about those type of things. Also, the Republican Party as a whole now, with this movement to the right, have basically managed to irritate many, many groups of people, from Medicare Part D, overfunding of Medicare Advantage plans, to the war, to the passage of the marriage amendment thing. What do you think they're going to do now, since they lost so many seats, to appear to come more to the middle I used to be Republican, but the last election, forget it, straight Democrat all the way down the line.
You know, and listening to you, my reaction is that's very bad news for the Republicans. You know, when someone who has been basically a straight line Republican abandons them for the Democrats, that's a real wake up call. And what I think the Christian right will do going forward is try to reconfigure themselves around issues that are not necessarily cultural or religious issues. The environment, I think, would be a good example of that. And I know Jerry Falwell said that, you know, those who talk about global warming are really trying to confuse us and you know, taking our eyes off the more important issues of, you know, abortion or homosexuality. But I think that's where there's growth potential for the religious right. On issues that have nothing to do, at least nothing directly to do with religion or with culture, and I think the environment is a good example of that.
And there is a pretty large movement, an evangelical movement,
yep,
for fighting climate change.
Yep, yep. In other words, connecting their movement to the concerns of average Americans who might not necessarily be members of a Christian right organization. In other words, trying to expand the reach. I think that's the only future that the Christian right has in terms of influencing national politics and actually winning elections, as opposed to dominating a party.
Will they be able to walk that balance, though, of being maybe, I don't know, anti-war or pro-environment, but still hold the line on things like abortion and gay rights?
Well, it's going to be tough because there are going to be schisms in the movement between purists who obviously want to talk about abortion and gay rights, and that's about it. And others who are more moderate. It depends. Do you want to control the Republican Party or do you want to control the United States? If you want to control the Republican Party, then talk about abortion and gay rights. If you want to control the United States, it probably would be a good idea to talk about things like global warming and even poverty.
Yeah, let's go back to Jerry Falwell and his fall, if you will, because in the later part of his life, through this last 10 years or so, he really has said some sort of extraordinary things,
yeah,
and was mocked pretty universally.
I know.
You know, from the Teletubby, Tinky Winky is gay, to blaming 9/11 on gays and feminists. I mean, what happened?
Well, I don't think anything really happened to Jerry Falwell. I think that he was saying these kinds of things. In other words, there's a saying that you dance with the one you brung. It's a saying, basically, you know, what got you in gets you through. Well, that was Jerry Falwell from the very beginning. You know, if Jerry Falwell was a stock car driver, racer, to use an analogy, he would have been like Richard Petty. You know, he would have been like the son of a bootlegger, and to some extent he was. That's his style. You know, his style is not a deeply intellectual style, or even a style such as Billy Graham's. So it's not surprising that he would, you know, he would. I mean, the Teletubbies remark was not his remark. I mean, it was in his magazine, so he's responsible for it. He made those remarks about 9/11. These are the kinds of things he was doing his whole life. That's what got him where he was, basically. But the audience changed, you know, and the times changed, and he may not have changed along with them. In other words, what he maybe didn't realize is that many of his parishioners, their children, watched Teletubbies and didn't seem to think that there was anything wrong with it. And in other words, he's not someone who's known for calm consideration, for picking his spots. He's a take no prisoners kind of speaker, and I think he was very much the same in the last 10 years of his life as he was throughout his life. It's just that the reactions to what he said changed.
Hmm. We're talking about not only Jerry Falwell, but the greater question of the religious right in America, its history, its impact on American politics, its current state, and its future. We want to know what you think about the religious right. Do you consider yourself among that, as part of that movement, or are you a critic? What do you think about the current crop of Republican presidential candidates and how they might shift the game once again? 800-486-8655 is the toll-free number. Here in Milwaukee, 414-227-2050. Peter Donald's here in for Kathleen Dunn, back with our guest Gerald Pedair of Lawrence University. Let me ask you, a common theme that we hear from the Christian right is the idea that the movement is constantly under siege by the secular world. Is that a true feeling, a tactic? It's certainly a common theme we hear trumpeted.
Well, you know, every movement needs an enemy. And needs a palpable enemy. And for the religious right, it's secularism and the forces of secularism. And to make it even more specific, it's the two coasts, basically, East Coast and West Coast of secularists. And I think there's a great deal of truth to the fact that that a lot of educated secularists look upon the Christian right, look upon the followers of Jerry Falwell as uneducated, as unsophisticated, as mistaken in their reading of the Bible, literalists, obviously, in their reading of the Bible, as people that establishment figures on the coast look down upon. I would be willing to bet that if you went to Columbia University or New York University, the two major universities in New York City, where I'm from originally, and you asked, are there any people who have ever supported Jerry Falwell on the faculty of either of those universities, you probably would not find one single person, and that takes in a lot. And you can go to the West Coast and do the same thing. So I think there is some justification in the feeling that on the parts of people who used to belong to what was the moral majority, that their culture is under siege by secularism, and that secularism is represented by the elites of the coast.
Yeah, we just had Christopher Hitchens on this network a couple of days ago with his book God Is Not Great, and I can tell you it's only the latest in a long line of books that have come across my desk of similar ilk.
There is to some extent a culture war going on, and to a large extent it's a geographic war where the middle of the country and the southern part of the country is aligned against the two coasts. To flip it over, I would be willing to bet that very, very few members of the moral majority attended Ivy League colleges.
Yeah. Who coined the phrase culture wars? I don't recall. It wasn't Jerry Falwell, was it?
It wasn't Jerry Falwell. I'm not sure. It was certainly somebody on the right.
Yeah.
It's now been used as the title of dozens of books coming from the right. So I'm not exactly sure, but you know, I think Jerry Falwell understood that there was a culture war going on in the country, even if he didn't use those exact words, and that's what got him into politics. I think that for 50 years after the Scopes trial, from the 1920s to the 1970s, there was this idea among evangelicals that they were basically going to keep their heads down, that they were not going to be of the world, and that they were going to, you know, to basically turn inward. And it's Jerry Falwell who basically opened the door. I would hate to use the word got them out of the closet metaphorically, but I think that's what he did because he felt so strongly that secular values were being traduced. You know, it's interesting. I teach a course in American Studies here at Lawrence, and the other day I played the song from my class, "Okie from Muskogee," which is a Merle Haggard song from the 1960s, a very angry anti-countercultural song. And I played a live version of that song with a cheering audience, singing along with him, clapping. And I told my class, you know, that's the part of America that the secular elites on either coast don't see.
Yeah. We're not the jet set. We're the old Chevrolet set.
Yeah, pretty much. And those are the people that Jerry Falwell represented, basically. And through him, they got a voice. Now, Falwell was also brilliant in his understanding of the media and television. And I'm not sure whether your previous guest talked about that, but he understood the power of television. And if you catch on to that power in the 1960s and 1970s, you're going to go a long way.
yeah. Marielle is calling for, boy, where are you calling from, Marielle? Hi. You're on the air. Marielle?
Hello.
Hello, you're on the air.
All right.
Is it Sinsawana?
Pardon?
Is it Sinsawana?
Sinsinawa.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Go ahead. Go ahead with your question.
Well, I don't have a question. I have an objection to the term Christian right.
Okay.
Because the term Christian does not apply to this group. There are too many things that they are supporting that are non-Christian, such as the war that we're involved in right now. Support of that war, I'm not talking about supporting our soldiers, but I'm talking about the beginning of it and the problems on it, that it is far from Christian values. And I object to using the word Christian to apply to anything that supports this war.
Okay. Marielle, I appreciate the call very much. And, you know, we started the hour, I talked about the fact that I was uncomfortable with the terms Christian right or religious right or even evangelical and how they're interchanged sometimes. What do you think about Marielle's comment?
Well, it's interesting. When Marielle was making her comment, I was thinking about how the idea of Christianity or even the idea of American is contested in America. That different groups are basically vying for that mantle. In other words, Jerry Falwell is saying, well, I am a true Christian. But then there are Unitarian ministers who would say, you're not a Christian, Jerry Falwell. We are the true Christians. And basically, you have various groups of Christians who are arguing about, you know, what does it mean? What does it mean in real life? What does it mean in political life? If you're a Christian, should you support the war in Iraq? Or if you're a Christian, should you oppose the war in Iraq? It's the same thing about Americanism, the same thing about patriotism. What does a real American do?
Yeah.
The one thing I would say, however, is that in the 1960s and 1970s, again, to go back to the, you know, to the East and West Coast secularists, they allowed the mantle of patriotism in America to be taken from them and more or less hijacked by the religious right and hijacked by the Republican Party. In other words, to get back to my favorite song, Okie from Muskogee again, these are real patriots in this song. These are people who love the United States, and by implication, the secularists, the Democrats on the coasts are the ones who don't.
Yeah,
so to some extent, the people who who wear the American flags in their lapel pins, they're the ones who have taken over patriotism.
Yeah, I was going to say it's a grand game of capture the flag, and where does that stand today? Do we have a proclaimed winner, or is that still in play?
Well, I think to a large extent, the Democrats have to try to take back that mantle, because the Republicans really, really took it in the 1970s and 1980s. And maybe one measure of that is who's wearing American flag lapels in their pins. I personally am uncomfortable when I see a newsman, like so many of the news people on Fox, wearing an American flag lapel pin. But I haven't noticed whether Democratic presidential candidates are doing that. I haven't looked closely enough yet.
I haven't either, but I'm guessing they are.
Well, I'm guessing they are too, and I think that is putting the idea of patriotism, of American patriotism, of true Americanism, however we define it,
yeah,
back in play. But I would say from the 1960s on, that was a Republican monopoly, and once again, Jerry Falwell plays a major role in making that happen.
Yeah, that whole flag lapel pin thing always, it made me uncomfortable. It appeared as though some kind of a, almost like taking a loyalty oath.
Right. Right.
You know, like,
oh yeah,
it's a prerequisite.
I think there are connections to McCarthyism, I was just thinking. I'm old enough to go back to the 1970s, and growing up in New York, I remember a Senate campaign in 1970 involving William Buckley's brother, James Buckley, who was running for the Senate as a Republican and a conservative. And I remember his campaign slogan was "Join the March for America." And I remember saying to myself, "Well, I'm." I'm voting against him. I'm voting for the Democratic candidate, but I'm an American too.
Yeah.
I'm marching for American as well,
right.
America as well. But what I realized over the next 20 years, from the 70s up until the 90s, is that the Republicans had more or less monopolized the idea of being a patriotic American. And part of that was their fault, so to speak, but part of that was the Democrats' fault as well, because they let them have it. I think that's changing. I think that all three of the, at least the, you know, the front-running Democratic candidates, Clinton, Obama, and Edwards, will not make that mistake. I think I'm going to be looking very closely the next time I see all of them to see whether you see those American flag pins in their in the lapels. And
yeah.
I have a feeling you're right. I think they're going to be there.
Let's talk next with Joe in Madison. Hi, Joe.
Hi. I wanted to call in because I feel so strongly that. Falwell was really a despicable man who raised money, and this is quite well documented, by making gays his scapegoat. And Mel White, who is a beautiful, wonderful gay Christian, labored with him all of his life. And Falwell never, the sad thing is that he died without renouncing his vendetta against gay people. And he really did. You know, he didn't have other, like, racial epithets or he could use, but he could use the gay scare to raise money. And he did. He used it all the time. I have copies of letters that he sent out and said, you know, we've got to protect ourselves from these terrible people. So he did more to defame gay people than almost anyone else. Robertson, of course, probably was number one, but Falwell did it too. And so it grieves me to have him eulogized in any way.
Thank you, Joe.
Well, you know, for my reaction to Falwell's use of the gay issue is that to some extent it's a stand-in for a racial issue. In other words, I think Falwell is smart enough to know that he can't use direct racial language in his appeals. I mean, he's a Southerner. I think he, you know, he understands the history, but he can say things about gays that he can't say about blacks.
Well, AIDS was God's punishment, according
exactly.
to Jerry Falwell.
In other words, he is able to say that. He is not allowed and will not say anything drugs or God's punishment against African Americans or something racist like that. He can't say that. So I think gays are almost a target for him, that he has a sense that he can say things about them that he couldn't say about other ethnic groups or other racial groups. And I think he, you know, this is a very a pragmatic man. In other words, you can't get from where he started. And I'm looking at my map of the United States in my office right now at Lynchburg, Virginia. You can't go all the way from Lynchburg, Virginia to becoming one of the most famous people and influential people in the United States if you don't take your chances as you see them. And I think for him, attacking gays was almost like a free shot. He could say things that he could never say about other groups. So I think to some extent his animus towards gays is a stand-in possibly for animus against African Americans.
And time for one more call. Dick, if you could be brief from Oconomowoc. Hi, Dick.
Oh, sure. Yeah, thanks. Just concurrence with regard to all of our discomforts relative to labelers. Certainly a prominent talk show host at the national level is one of our biggest labelers, and copycats follow, and it's sad. We're all demeaning ourselves with to the extent that we label ourselves. Just a real quick comment, though, relative to an inherent conflict between, and I guess we have to use a label, you know, the religious right or the outspoken religious right, relative to wanting to use the power of the state relative to so many social issues. Think of one or think of all of them. You know, their central thrust is to try and use the power of the state in a way that so many people find so deeply objectionable, i.e. the high water mark of the Republican Party at the time of the Terry Schiavo attempted legislative fiasco. That inherent conflict between wanting a small outspoken group to use the power of the state in such a restrictive manner, you know, relative to other people, is the inherent difficulty that the outspoken religious groups, okay, as well as the Republican Party, I feel will have for a long time.
Got it. Thanks, Dick. The final minute here.
That's a great point. That really is a great point, because there is an inherent tension in Falwell's ideology and the ideology of the Christian right generally between using the government, government intrusiveness in social matters, but no government intrusiveness in economic matters. You know, there's an inherent contradiction in what they're saying, and I don't think they've ever resolved it.
And with that, we'll let you go. Thanks so much for spending this time with us.
Sure.
Okay, that's Gerald Pedair. He's Associate Professor of History at Lawrence University. Our first segment guest was William Martin, Professor of Religion and Public Policy at Rice University, where he's also a senior scholar in the James A. Baker III Institute for Public Policy. Thanks to John Treader, who took phone calls today. Rhonda Fanning produced the hour. Up next, news, and then more programming here on the network. Kathleen Dunn will be back in this chair tomorrow. And I am Peter Donalds, in for Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.